good day. This is Mary reading Newsmax for the Talking Information Centre. It is Monday, April 6th of 2026. And the first story up is Trump feared. Excuse me, Trump. U.S. feared Iran trap in F-15 crew rescue. President Donald Trump said Sunday he feared a message from a stranded crew member of a U.S. Air Force F-15 Strike Eagle shot down by Iran could have been a trap set by Iranian forces. The crew member survived more than 24 hours in the mountains despite being wounded. He was rescued Saturday by about 200 U.S. Special Operation troops. Trump spoke to Axios about an hour after confirming the rescue Sunday morning, saying that thousands of these savages were hunting him down, referring to members of the Iranian military. Even the population was looking for him. They offered people a bonus if they captured him, Trump said. Trump said the Iranian military shot down the F-15 using a shoulder-fired missile. They got lucky, he said. The weapons system officer hid in a mountain crevice, Trump said, adding the U.S. military had beeping tracking information about his location. After a radio message, officials suspected he might be in the Iranian captivity. They believe Iran could be sending false signals to lure U.S. forces into a trap. Trump said the officer gave a short, unusual message over his radio after ejecting from the aircraft. He said, "Power be to God," Trump said. A U.S. defense official confirmed Trump's account, to Axios, but said that the exact phrase was, "God is good." War Secretary Pete Hegseth used the phrase, "God is good," in an ex post Sunday morning. What he said on the radio sounded like something a Muslim would say, Trump said. People who know the officer said he is a religious person, and it made sense. Excuse me. People who know the officer said he is a religious person, and it made sense for him to say that, Trump added. The defense official confirmed that account. It was not completely clear early on, but we stuck with it and verified he was alive and not captured, the official told Axios, and those who knew him said he is religious. Trump noted the pilot was rescued much more quickly in daylight under heavy fire from Iranian forces. A U.S. defense official called the first operation Friday a bold and quick snatch in daylight, while the second was carried out at night after establishing a temporary base inside Iran. The two crew members were spread apart by a couple of miles. Hundreds of IRGC, Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, soldiers were everywhere, the defense official said. Trump said the Israeli Defense Forces helped the U.S. military a little bit during the search and rescue of both crew members. A U.S. defense official said that the Israelis did not provide information about the location of the weapons system officer, but shared intelligence about the general situation on the ground. The Israeli Air Force conducted one strike to prevent Iranian forces from reaching the area, Israeli officials said. They have been good partners, Trump said, and they have been great and brave people. We are like a big brother and a little brother. And Senator McCormick, the Airman's Rescue and Easter Miracle. The rescue of a downed American airman in hostile Iranian territory was an Easter miracle and a powerful demonstration of U.S. military capabilities, Senator Dave McCormick said Sunday. I just got off the phone with the senior administrator, who was deeply involved in every step of the operation, and there are so many heroes in this story, the Pennsylvania Republican said in a televised interview, adding that the mission underscored the commitment the U.S. makes to its service members. When you're going into enemy territory, to know America is going to do everything they can is critical, McCormick said. The senator also highlighted the airman's actions while awaiting rescue. The airman was an absolute hero, McCormick said. He climbed 7,000 feet. When the planners were trying to identify where he was, they could not imagine he was both injured and able to get to that point where he could eventually be rescued. The operation involved hundreds of special operators and aircraft and relied on intelligence tactics, including misdirection efforts that helped locate the airman. He added, "This was a remarkable operation that only the American military and the American intel community could pull off," he said. The rescue comes amid ongoing U.S. operations targeting Iran's military capabilities. McCormick said the mission reflects broader progress made in recent weeks. U.S. forces have significantly degraded Iran's infrastructure, including missiles, drones, naval assets, and production capabilities, he noted. "We have made enormous progress by any measure at the military objectives that the president has laid out, ensuring that Iran does not have a path to nuclear weapon," said McCormick. The senator added that additional work remains. "Clearly, there is more work to do, McCormick said. Turning to military funding, McCormick said Congress is expected to debate additional spending in the coming weeks and indicated support for continued investment. "We absolutely will need more spending," he said. "We need to support our military with additional funding in a time of dramatic change." He said the administration's timeline remains on track. The president laid out on day one that this would be weeks and months, but not a prolonged engagement, and he is on track with the objectives he laid out, McCormick said. The senator also addressed election legislation, reiterating support for the Save America Act and criticizing Democratic opposition. He said Republicans may continue pushing the measure through procedural tactics, including a talking filibuster, while also exploring reconciliation options. "The most important thing is for the Democrats to defend to the American people why they are against something that the majority of Americans support," McCormick said. And also from Newsmax, Congo says it will receive third country deportees under new deal with U.S. Democratic Republic of Congo will receive third country nationals deported from the United States under a new deal with the Trump administration, the government in Kinshasa said in a statement on Sunday. The government said it will receive deportees starting in April, but did not say how many it had agreed to take. The arrangement will be paid for by the United States with no cost to the Congolese government, the statement said. Facilities have been prepared near the capital, Kinshasa, to accommodate the deportees, it said. The United States has sent third country deportees to several African countries, including Ghana, Cameroon, Equatorial Guinea, and Eswatini, drawing skepticism from legal experts and rights groups. The agreement coincides with an effort by the Trump administration to implement a peace deal between Congo and Rwanda and an agreement ensuring U.S. access to Congolese critical minerals. And also from Newsmax, Dirkowicz to Newsmax, Bondi got a bum rap over Epstein. Asked Attorney General Pam Bondi was unfairly criticized over the handling of materials related to disgraced financier Jeffrey Epstein, as the controversy is way, way, way overstated, Harvard Law School Professor Emeritus Alan Dershowitz said on Newsmax's Sunday report. "I think she got a bum rap on the Epstein matter," Dershowitz said. "Look, When all the files in Epstein finally come out, there's going to be a yawn of disappointment. Dershowitz said the public expectations surrounding the case will not match the eventual disclosures. We're going to find out there was no pedophilia. We're going to find out there was no trafficking, he said. There were four categories of people. Victims, real victims, not that many young people. He added, then, people who came back over and over again for their 150, 250. Then people who helped recruit other young people. And then people who never heard of Epstein, just came in and collected. Just came in and collected the 50,000 and went away. He added that many of the claims tied to prominent individuals have already been disproven. There is a list of people who have been falsely accused. The FBI has that list. The list includes many prominent people who have disproved the allegations against them, he said. Dershowitz said all remaining records should be made public with limited exceptions. Let's disclose everything. Every single word of everything, he said, with one exception. Kids under age of 18 who are not able to consent. Their names should be withheld, but no adult name should be told. No accuser's name should be withheld, and no accused name should be withheld. He also said claims involving President Donald Trump have not been substantiated. There's nothing there. Nothing there about Donald Trump, nothing there about former President Bill Clinton, nothing there about prominent people, Dershowitz said. Turning to the search for a potential replacement, Dershowitz said several names are under consideration, including U.S. Attorney for D.C. Jean Perot, Acting Attorney General Todd Blanche, and EPA Administrator Lee Zeldin. She's terrific. And she's a very tough prosecutor, Dershowitz said of Perot, a lot of experience. He said Blanche is also qualified. He is fit for the role because he's very professional. He's a really good lawyer, and he represented Donald Trump, so he passes the loyalty test, Dershowitz said. On Zeldin, Dershowitz said he could bring credibility despite less prosecutorial experience. Dershowitz emphasized that the Attorney General position itself presents inherent challenges. It's an impossible job, he said. It's a schizophrenic job. On the one hand, you're supposed to be the advisor to the president and do whatever the president wants. You're a cabinet member. On the other hand, you're the chief law enforcement officer. He said future prosecutors may be more selective in pursuing cases. The first rule of a prosecutor is don't go after somebody who you're not going to win, Dershowitz said, noting prosecutors typically maintain high success rates by focusing on provable cases. Dershowitz added that confirmation politics and the upcoming midterms will also factor into Trump's decision, as candidates must be able to secure Senate approval. He has a good list, he said, adding that some potential picks could face tougher confirmation battles than others. And also from Newsmax, Gordon Chang to Newsmax, the US-China moon race is about control. The US and China are engaged in an intensifying space race that will ultimately be decided not just by reaching the moon, but by controlling it. China expert Gordon Chang told Newsmax on Sunday while discussing the Artemis II mission. The Chinese are closely watching this because they want to get on the moon first. Now they probably won't. They're a year or two behind, Chang said on Newsmax, adding that the broader competition is about long-term presence. Let's remember there are two space races with China. Chang said one is a race to the moon. That's to actually put somebody there. But The more important race, he said, is to colonize the moon. The country that gets to the South Pole of the moon first will have the best location for a colony, he said. Meanwhile, former astronaut Wilson Scott, also on Sunday's program, said China's rapid progress has made the competition more urgent. Chinese space program is the fastest growing. You know, we, the United States, have seen fits and starts over the last decade or so. But thank goodness we have an administration in place that is focused on us, on space, and refocused us and rededicated the resources we are, Scott said. Chang said NASA's shifting timeline shows how tight the race has become. Well, the race is tight, according to NASA, and I think that's right, he said. We have 2028 as our target date for getting to the moon, but that has slipped. It was supposed to be Artemis 3. Now it's Artemis 6, as Captain Scott just mentioned. The Chinese also now have a space station, Chang said. Scott highlighted China's growing position in orbit. The U.S. is getting ready to de-orbit the International Space Station, Scott said. If we do that here soon, that will leave China with the only permanently crewed space station in orbit. China is the only nation to have returned lunar samples from the far side of the moon. He also pointed to Beijing's military focus in space. Another point that we need to think about is the militarization of space, Scott said. Our Space Force is only a few years old and implemented by President Donald Trump in his first administration. But the Chinese have been militarizing space for many, many years. And also from Newsmax, North Korea is working on a carbon fiber ICBM for multi-warhead delivery. North Korea's test of a solid-fuel rocket engine is intended for intercontinental ballistic missiles, ICBMs, built with carbon fiber to extend range and allow for delivery of heavier and possibly multi-warheads, South Korean lawmakers said on Monday. In March, North Korea conducted a ground test of a solid-fuel rocket engine that analysis believes is being developed for its latest ICBM. The new engine likely has greater thrust than the previous model it tested in 2024, which was already assessed as capable of striking anywhere in the mainland United States, they said. North Korea has conducted all its longer-range missile launches at a lofted trajectory to splash down the projectiles in the ocean off its east coast or to the east of Japan to test them without flying them for a distance that they are designed for. North Korea media showed the airframe of the missile at the new engine test that was built with carbon fiber, which is lightweight while strong, allowing the projectile to carry multiple warheads, Member of Parliament Park Sung-won said. Park was speaking to reporters following a closed-door briefing by the National Intelligence Service, NIS, South Korea's main spy agency. North Korea leader Kim Jong-un was on hand for the March 28th test and said it was a significant upgrade to the country's strategic forces. North Korea has defied a UN Security Council ban on missile and nuclear tests, steadily progressing in the development of more powerful and technically superior missiles. And Paramount is in talks for golf backing in Warner takeover. Paramount Skydance is in talks to secure signed equity commitments of almost $24 billion from three sovereign wealth funds led by Saudi Arabia to help back its takeover of Warner Brothers Discovery, the Wall Street Journal reported on Sunday. The U.S. entertainment giant in February said it has agreed It has agreed by its peer in a $110 billion deal with an equity value of $81 billion that they expect to close in the third quarter. The merger would combine major studios and networks such as CNN and CBS, enabling them to compete more aggressively as streaming draws audiences away from traditional linear TV. To help back the takeover, the Saudi Arabia's Public Investment Fund, PIF, has agreed to provide roughly $10 billion, the WSJ report citing people familiar with the matter. The other backers are likely to include Qatar Investment Authority and Abu Dhabi's Liamad Holding, the WSJ reported. PIF, Qatar Investment Authority, and Liamad Holding did not respond to Reuters' email request for comment outside of regular business hours. Paramount declined to comment. The Gulf backers will not have voting rights in the new Paramount Warner entity, the WSJ reported. Paramount executives do not expect the fund's involvement to trigger a review by the Committee on Foreign Investment in the U.S. or Federal Communications Commission, the journal said. And also from Newsmax, UCLA dominates South Carolina for first NCAA women's hoops title. It's mission accomplished for UCLA. Gabriela Jaquez, Lauren Betts, and the rest of the UCLA seniors secured the first NCAA Women's Basketball National Championship in school history, a goal that was set after losing in the first Final Four last season. Jaquez scored 21 points, Betts added 16, and UCLA routed South Carolina 79-51 Sunday in the title game. I knew we were going to do it. Coming to UCLA, we all set out for a goal, and I imagined this moment, Jackie said. I imagined it so many times, and I'm just so, so proud. Crying a lot, the confetti, all the fans being here to support us, my family being here, it just means everything. Celebrating with this group, like, I'm so happy. The near-record lopsided victory completed the Bruins' journey through... The Bruins ran through their opponents this season, with their only loss coming in November to Texas in a Thanksgiving tournament. It's immeasurably more than I could ask or imagine, UCLA coach Corey Close said. It's beyond my wildest dreams. UCLA 37-1 was led by Betts and her fellow seniors and graduate students like Jaquez, who played all 4 years with the Bruins. She also had 10 rebounds and 5 assists in front of her brother Jamie, who plays for the Miami Heat and flew into the inn to attend the game to watch his alma mater win. The group that Coach Close put together through a combination of high school commitments and transfer portal players capped off their stellar careers with a championship, scoring all the points in the title game. Connectivity, attention to detail. You know, I looked them in the eyes before in the locker room, before the game, and I said, I'm so proud to be able to say this, Close said, because... All year we've been saying the talent is our floor, but our character will determine our ceiling. The title is UCLA's first since winning the 1978 AIAW Championship, which was the postseason tournament for women's basketball before the NCAA took over in 1982. The championship game lost was the second straight for the Gamecocks, who won the title in 2024. Dawn Staley and her Gamecocks, 36-4, will be favored to return to the game's biggest stage with a talented group of expected returnees, led by Joyce Edwards and Agot Meker. Like their 51-44 semi-final win over Texas, the Bruins were locked in defensively, anchored by Betts. She finished with 11 rebounds and exited the game with 3.45 left, giving Close a huge hug. The 6'7" senior earned Most Outstanding Player honors of the Final Four. UCLA is a quality team with a very experienced players who got a taste of being in the Final Four last year. And you make adjustments, South Carolina's Staley said. From last year to this year, they played determined last year, but they played more determined this year because they were so close. Offensively, the Bruins had a much easier time than in the semi-final game that saw the team score only 20 points in the first half. The Bruins surpassed that total in the opening 10 minutes against South Carolina. Kiki Rice's three-pointer just before the first quarter buzzer made it 21-10 as the Bruins got off to a strong start and South Carolina struggled with 70% shooting, its poorest quarter of the season. The Bruins extended the lead to 15 points in the second quarter by clogging up the paint on defense and working the ball inside on defense for a 36-23 lead in the half. UCLA put the game away in the third quarter, opening the period with a 12-3 run. Jacquees had 5 points during the spurt. South Carolina never threatened again, as the Bruins outscored them 25-9 in the period. "We just didn't have it today. We tried, but we just didn't have it today," Staley said. They were the better team. South Carolina avoided the most lopsided loss in championship history of 33 points, set in 2013 when UConn defeated Louisville. The Gamecocks also surpassed the title game record low of 44 points by Louisiana Tech in 1987 against Tennessee. The Gamecocks were trying to cement their name as the premier program in the sport with a fourth championship and third in the past five seasons. It just wasn't meant to be Sunday, as they had their worst shooting game of the season against a talented UCLA team. "This was not the ending we wanted, but we got here. No one thought we would, and we did it," said Tessa Johnson, who led the South Carolina with 14 points. Makia added 11 for the Gamecocks. "The score speaks for itself," said Gamecock senior Raven Johnson, who played in five Final Fours in her career. Close has been at UCLA for 15 seasons, but her connections go deeper with the school as she was mentored by the legendary Bruins men's coach, John Wooden, who won 10 national championships at the school. Their bond began when she was 22 years old and he was 83. She shares the same first name with one of his great-granddaughters. Close visited Wooden bi-weekly, adopting his pyramid of success and focus on character, and it's paid off with her team. Coach Wooden always said, you've got to do it the way you're wired to do it, not the way anyone else did. And I just tried imperfectly to stay true to that, Close said. Also from Newsmax, Savannah Guthrie is back at Today anchor desk for the first time since her mother's disappearance. Savannah Guthrie was back at NBC's Today show anchor desk on Monday for the first time in more than 2 months since her mother's disappearance, saying, "It's good to be home. Here we go, ready or not," Guthrie said as the show opened. "Let's do the news." Guthrie has acknowledged that she's a changed person and that it's hard to go forward not knowing what happened to Nancy Guthrie, who authorities believe was taken against her will from her Arizona home. Despite an intense search, involving thousands of federal and local officers and volunteers. There has been no sign of the 84-year-old mother of three since she was reported missing February 1st. As part of a video message released by her New York church on Easter Sunday, Guthrie spoke about feeling moments of deep disappointment with God, the feeling of utter abandonment. But she said, "The resurrection is not fully celebrated if we do not acknowledge the feelings of loss, pain, and yes, death." In announcing her return to NBC's flagship morning show, Guthrie said she was uncertain whether she'll feel like she still belongs. "It's hard to imagine doing it because it's such a place of joy and lightness," she said just over a week ago on Today during her first interview since the disappearance. "I can't come back and try to be something that I'm not, but I can't not come back because it's my family." Guthrie, one of morning television's most recognizable faces, has been a co-anchor at Today since 2012. She doesn't anticipate faking her way through the show, which is normally lighthearted with a mix of serious breaking news. There had been a great deal of speculation about whether she would return. "I want to smile, and when I do, it will be real," she told Hoda Kotb, who came back to Today to fill in while Guthrie focused on the search. "Being there is joyful, and when it's not, I'll say so." Nancy Guthrie made occasional appearances on the Today over the years, once taking part in a cooking demonstration and surprising her daughter on the set. When Savannah Guthrie returned to her hometown of Tucson in 2025 for a segment recorded for the show, the two visited one of their favorite restaurants and talked about their love of Arizona. The Guthrie family has offered a $1 million reward for information leading to the recovery of their mother. Authorities believe Nancy Guthrie was kidnapped, abducted, or otherwise taken against her will after finding blood near the doorstep of her home in the foothills outside of Tucson. The FBI later released surveillance videos showing a masked man on the porch that night. Volunteers and search teams scoured the nearby desert terrain filled with cactuses, bushes, and boulders in the first weeks after she vanished. But attention has faded from an investigation that was declared to be a top priority for the FBI and local authorities. Investigators have not released new evidence in weeks and say the number of tips has slowed. The FBI and the Pima County Sheriff's Department both said late last week that they had no updates. Early on, some media outlets reported receiving ransom messages tied to the case. Guthrie said she and her siblings responded to two that they believed were real and offered to pay. Guthrie said her celebrity status might be the reason her mother was taken, but that possibility was too much to bear. And also from Newsmax, science-backed benefits of chocolate. If the Easter Bunny leaves you a basket filled with dark chocolate treats, go ahead and enjoy, in moderation. While chocolate goodies can be high in sugar and calories, dark chocolate also contains antioxidants and minerals that offer notable health benefits. To get the most benefit, choose high-quality dark chocolate with at least 70 to 85% cacao. Keep in mind that dark chocolate is calorie dense, so portion control matters. A typical serving, about 1 ounce or 28 grams, contains roughly 150 to 170 calories, depending on the cacao content and added ingredients. Higher cacao percentages generally mean less sugar, but calories can still add up quickly. According to the health According to Healthline, here are some science-backed benefits of dark chocolate. Rich in antioxidants, dark chocolate helps combat free radicals and may reduce inflammation. Compounds such as polyphenols and catechins can help protect against disease. Packed with minerals, it contains essential nutrients, including iron, magnesium, and zinc, which support overall health. It supports heart health. Moderate consumption may help lower blood pressure and improve cholesterol levels. Flavonoids in dark chocolate promote healthier arteries and help prevent the oxidation of LDA, bad cholesterol, reducing buildup in the arteries. And that may protect the skin. A 2021 review found that flavonoids in dark chocolate can help protect against sun damage and improve blood flow to the skin. And it boosts brain function. Some studies suggest cocoa's high flavonoid content may enhance brain function by increasing blood flow to the brain. Enhances the mood. Dark chocolate may stimulate the release of endorphins and serotonin, helping improve mood. And what about milk and white chocolate? Milk and white chocolate do not offer the same health benefits as dark chocolate. Milk chocolate contains less cocoa and more sugar and dairy, resulting in fewer antioxidants and more calories. White chocolate contains no cocoa solids at all, providing little nutritional value beyond taste and energy. If you're looking for an antioxidant and mineral benefits, dark chocolate is the better choice, while milk and white varieties are best enjoyed as an occasional treat. Also from Newsmax, West Virginia Governor Morrissey signs a bill targeting censorship, and it's a blow to NewsGuard. West Virginia Governor Patrick Morrissey signed into law last week the First Amendment Preservation Act, SB 531, a sweeping measure that bars state agencies from doing business with advertising firms that rely on media blacklists or ideological rating systems. The move marks a significant escalation in a growing national push to curb federal and state agencies from working with advertising firms that use third-party organizations to engage in de facto censorship. Just last week, The Federalist and Daily Wire announced a major legal settlement with the State Department, ending the agency's coordination with and funding of so-called media misinformation monitors. The West Virginia legislation, sponsored by State Senator Mike Azinger and passed with overwhelming support by the state legislature, prohibits taxpayer-funded advertising from being routed through agencies that use so-called media reliability or misinformation monitors, a practice widely criticized by conservatives as a mechanism to target and financially starve conservative-leaning outlets from advertising. While the law does not explicitly name specific organizations, it is widely believed to respond to left-wing entities such as NewsGuard and the Global Disinformation Index, GDI, both of which have drawn scrutiny from compiling ratings that influence where advisors place their dollars and which publications are deemed acceptable by big tech firms. Governor Morrissey deserves tremendous credit for standing up for free speech and ensuring that taxpayers' dollars are never used to enforce ideological media blacklists, said Christine Gazarski, spokesperson for the Independent Media Council. The IMC represents over a dozen independent and conservative media outlets that reach more than 70 million Americans regularly. Sinasa-Jaworski added that the measure ensures diverse voices should be heard and that public funds are used to ensure that all citizens are informed, not a narrow political group. The IMC and other supporters argue that media monitoring organisations like NewsGuard and GDI operate as gatekeepers in the digital and television advertising ecosystem, using highly subjective criteria and decisions that disproportionately penalise conservative outlets, while allowing left-leaning or even foreign state-backed media to receive more favourable treatment. According to three separate studies conducted by the Media Research Centre, MRC, NewsGuard consistently assigned lower credibility ratings to conservative publications compared to their liberal counterparts, and in some cases rated Chinese and Russian state-run media outlets more favourably than American conservative news organisations. NewsGuard was founded in 2018 by Stephen Brill, a longtime Democrat donor and activist, and has faced sustained criticism from conservatives who argue that its methodology reflects political bias rather than the neutral journalistic standards. Brill has repeatedly denied that he engaged in censorship, but the impact is clear. He works to defund media that opposes his political viewpoint. Legal scholars have also weighed in on the broader implications of rating systems, like NewsGuard, which constitutional expert Jonathan Turley warning that the government entanglement with private censorship mechanisms could raise serious First Amendment concerns, particularly when public funds are used in ways that are indirectly suppressed lawful speech. Turley has stated NewsGuard has been the key player in a massive censorship system. Supporters of the West Virginia law say it ensures that state advertising campaigns ranging from tourism promotion to public health messaging are not filtered through systems that exclude large segments of the population based on political or editorial viewpoints. In a largely rural state like West Virginia, officials and advocates note that restricting outreach through biased ad networks can prevent critical information from reaching key audiences such as outdoor enthusiasts, small town residents, and other communities vital to the state's economy and civic life. The move places West Virginia as part of a growing national trend, as policymakers at both the state and federal levels increasingly scrutinize the role of media blacklists in shaping the flow of advertising revenue and, by extension, the viability of news organizations. Last year, Florida's Governor Ron DeSantis signed into law a similar bill preventing state agencies from contracting with advertising firms that use media bias monitors. At the federal level, Congress included a provision in the National Defense Authorization Act, the NDAA, prohibiting the Pentagon from working with advertising agencies that employ such systems for military recruitment campaigns. Federal regulators have also signaled concern with the FCC and the Federal Trade Commission, emphasizing the need for safeguards against viewpoint discrimination in advertising markets, and President Donald Trump issuing an executive order aimed at preventing federal coordination to suppress lawful speech. Kazuno Jaworski said West Virginia's action will serve as a blueprint for other states seeking to protect free expression, stating that West Virginia has now established a model for other states, and predicting that additional legislatures will follow suit in coming months. The IMC maintains that the best response to misinformation is not suppression but greater openness, arguing that policies like SB 531 help restore a level playing field in an increasingly centralized digital advertising ecosystem. Also from Newsmax, GOP officials expect Trump's order on mail-in voting to be overturned. Two Republican election officials said that they believe President Donald Trump's executive order restricting mail-in voting will be struck down. Pennsylvania Secretary of the Commonwealth, Al Schmidt, and former Maricopa County Recorder, Stephen Richer, said litigation challenging the order is likely to succeed. We want voters to know that the election is going to be free, fair, safe, and secure, and that everyone knows that the rules are prior to going into this, Schmidt said on ABC News this week. So, confusion is never a positive thing unless you are seeking to sow distrust in the outcome of an election, Schmidt said. Trump's executive order directs his administration to compile a list of confirmed U.S. citizens eligible to vote in each state and to use federal data to help state election officials verify who is eligible to vote. It also requires the U.S. Postal Service to deliver ballots only to voters on each state's approval mail-in ballot list. States must also preserve election-related records for 5 years. A coalition of Democratic state attorney general announced Friday that they were filing a lawsuit challenging the executive order. The lawsuit, filed in federal court in Boston, adds to the growing number of legal challenges to the order, with cases also pursued by arms of the Democratic Party and voting rights advocates. We're going to work as hard as we can to make sure that this is a free and fair election, House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries, Democrat New York, who filed one of the lawsuits, said on this week. That executive order is unlawful and unconstitutional. We've already filed litigation, and we expect that it will be declared so in short order by the courts, Jeffries said. Richer, who ran Maricopa County elections from 21 to 2025, called Trump's order unnecessary. Arizona has some of the underlying features that President Trump aspires to have in all elections, Richer said. While I agree with some of the elements in the executive order and some of the aspirations, the form does matter. The White House has defended the executive order, saying it is intended to strengthen election integrity and ensure only eligible citizens vote. Also from Newsmax, why the Democrats rage against the tax that built America. When President Donald Trump's reciprocal tariffs began flooding the Treasury with record revenue and prying open foreign markets in 2025, Democrat leaders reacted not with glee or even debate, but with fury. All right, and Father Salvo to Newsmax, young Americans are driving faith revival. A surge in religious engagement among younger Americans reflects a broader spiritual revival. According to Father Enrique Salvo, rector of St. Patrick's Cathedral in New York City, who told Newsmax on Sunday that many are searching to fill that void that only God can fill. Salvo, speaking on Newsmax's Sunday agenda, pointed to renewed interest among Gen Z's and millennials as evidence that faith is spreading in a way similar to the early church. Let's remember, first and foremost, that the resurrection, the biggest moment in the history that will ever have been or ever will happen, less than 2,000 years ago, Salvo said. The same way that the early church spread is still happening right now, and it's the same way Jesus Christ is sending the Holy Spirit. He said young people are increasingly turning to faith as they look for deeper meaning and connection. The young people who are searching, who need something to fill that void that only God can fill, are helping one another like disciples and then the church is there waiting for them, Salvo said. A recent Barna Group survey supports that trend, showing engagement among Gen Zs and millennials rose more than 40% over a six-month period last year, with younger Americans now attending church more frequently than the older generations. Salvo said that momentum is likely to continue as younger believers influence one another and prioritize faith. All of these young people are on fire, Salvo said. Their faith is real, and it's just keep on growing because they're helping one another to become more and more, and therefore it's going to be a new normal. He added that the shift could have long-term societal effects as young adults build families centered on faith. It's going to be the way that they're going to want to raise their families, which in the future is going to be a beautiful thing because these young people will get married, have families, and then teach children the faith as a priority, Salvo said. Social media has played a role with some young people discovering religious content through platforms such as TikTok, even as they seek a more meaningful distraction-free experience in church. When they come to church, they want a beautiful, solemn mass. They want to really worship, Salvo said. They need that sacred place to be with God. Whoops. And to be in communion with one another. Despite acknowledging the challenges of modern life and negative news cycles, Salvo emphasized that the Easter message provides a foundation for optimism. The Easter message is in itself a message of hope that, yes, there is Good Friday, but Good Friday doesn't make sense without Easter Sunday, Salvo said. Even if we feel we're in the midst of Good Friday, we always keep our eyes on the light of the resurrection on Easter Sunday that God wants to give us all. And President Trump has endorsed Hilton for California governor. President Donald Trump on Monday endorsed former British government aide and Fox News host Steve Hilton in the upcoming California governor's race. Hilton, who has dual nationality, served as a former British Prime Minister David Cameron's Director of Strategy and was one of his closest advisors before leaving Downing Street in 2012 and moving to California. I have known and respected Steve Hilton, who is running for Governor of California, for many years. With federal help and a great governor like Steve Hilton, California can be better than ever before. Steve Hilton has my complete and total endorsement, True said on True Social. Under California law, the top two finishers in the June 2nd open primary contest will advance to November's election regardless of party. Polls show that Republican candidates Hilton and Chad Bianco, the Riverside County Sheriff, are closely bunched with three Democrats, U.S. Representative Eric Solow, former U.S. Representative Katie Porter, and billionaire activist Tom Steyer. Hilton and Bianco both support Trump, though they have sought to focus their campaigns on state-specific issues such as crime and high taxes. Democrat Gavin Newsom, who has been the governor of California since 2019, is not permitted to run for a third term. Actor Arnold Schwarzenegger was the last Republican to serve as California's governor from 2003 to 2011. And scientists find a signal cause of cognitive decline. Oh my. Aging can take a toll on memory. Now, a new study has identified a single protein as the culprit of cognitive decline, and scientists believe they may be closer to reversing that decline. Researchers at the University of California, San Francisco have identified a protein that appears to play a key role in age-related changes in the brain, particularly in the hippocampus, the region responsible for learning and memory. The protein, known as FTL1, has found at higher levels in older mice, which also showed fewer connections between brain cells and performed worse on cognitive tests. To better understand its role, scientists increased FTL1 levels in younger mice. Strikingly, their brains began to resemble those of older animals, with reduced neural connections and declines in memory-related behavior. But the most promising finding came when researchers lowered FTL1 levels in older mice. The animals showed measurable improvement, including stronger connections between neurons and better performance on memory tests. It's truly a reversal of impairment, said senior author Sol Valida, associate director of the UCSF Batkar Aging Research Institute. It's much more than merely delaying or preventing symptoms. Further analysis revealed that FTL1 also affects how brain cells use energy. Higher levels of the protein slowed metabolism in the hippocampus, which may contribute to cognitive decline. However, when researchers used a compound to boost cellular metabolism, they were able to counteract these negative effects. The findings published in the Nature Aging could open the door to new treatments aimed at preserving or even restoring brain function as people age. We're seeing more opportunities to alleviate the worst consequences of old age, Valida said. It's a hopeful time to be working on the biology of aging.